Welcome, Mika, to the podium. Thank you so much, Nancy, and thank you all for having me back. It's so good to see you again, and I'm looking forward to a chance to meet those of you whom I haven't gotten to meet yet. So the reading for today is from a book that really, I'm so glad you shared that, a book that really changed my life. It's called Nobody Cries When We Die. It's by Patrick Reyes. He says, "Those who call us to new life have also survived. We who are called to transmit the traditions of survival are also typically the ones who tell the stories of life. We are called to call others to life. However, our world does not allow enough room for our ancestors to walk freely among us. Those with their own stories of survival and caring for the next generation are often lost, forgotten, or buried. Lost because colonial histories have acted violently on our histories, erasing our bodies from history, or lost because their stories were not viewed in such a way as to reflect their beauty, their courage, and their own strength to survive their times. So often, the stories of our ancestors are treated as mere side characters or plots to the dominant narrative." The people of Ghana have a word, Sankofa, which translates to go back and get it. It's often used in a proverb which says that it is not wrong to go back for that which you have forgotten. In keeping with this month's Soul Matters theme of memory, that's what today's sermon is about. The ways in which the things that matter can be left behind or taken away, and the ways in which we can collectively go back to get them. It's not a new concept that our bodies carry stories. Stories of things to come. The title of today's sermon is taken from the Scottish play, in which the saying, the full sentence goes, "By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes." That's a concept we're familiar with. Is your nose itching or your ears burning? We have all these body connections to things we think may be happening or may have happened or may happen in the future. Our bodies also, outside of superstition, tell the stories of our lives. Stories of the past, big moments and little moments, the ankle we broke as a child, maybe climbing a tree, that aches when a storm is coming. As we recognize that today is Veterans Day, we acknowledge the much heavier weight that many veterans carry in their bodies of PTSD and other effects of trauma. And also, as we hold many things in our hearts today, we acknowledge the wounds we carry in our body, both in the physical bodies of those who have experienced the mass shootings and the other horrors, preventable horrors of gun violence. We've had two mass shootings just in the past 2 weeks. And the ways in which those moments of violence, the violence of our times, not just physical violence, but also social and emotional violence, the ways in which that impacts us all. The field of epigenetics was originally just about learning how genes turned on and off. How you end up with blue eyes or brown eyes, or In more recent epigenetics research, scientists have been studying what impact do all of these negative things like violence, like poverty, have on our bodies at the deep genetic level. When I first encountered Patrick Reyes, I was in a pastoral care class. And in order to tell this story, I will offer you a confession. I have always been someone who's really kind of uncomfortable with anger. I'm a peacemaker. I want things to be better. I want to make things better. I want to help people connect more. And so anger is one of those emotions that just really sat heavily with me. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand how people could carry so much anger sometimes. I had a really big, let's say, verbal disagreement with my professor when he shared the quote that to be black and somewhat woke in today's society is to be, from James Baldwin, is to be in a rage nearly all the time. And I just lost my mind. I was just so angry about this quote. And I said, that's not necessarily true. And I still stand behind that. That's not necessarily true. There are many, many complicated emotions that we bring to the work of anti-impression. But then he shared this book by Patrick Reyes, and I encourage all of you to go read this book. And in it, he tells a story of his first day in seminary. And he tells how the professor asked them to introduce themselves to each other. And as person after person after person in the class talked about this person they'd studied with, and this paper they'd written, and this book or conference they'd presented, and that's what they brought to the work, and those were their credentials, their resume, their pedigree. And it got around to him, and he said that what he brought to the class, that what the thing that he carried into this room brought to the work, was that he had survived. And his class laughed. They thought he was joking. His teacher said, "Give us a serious answer." And Patrick Reyes describes his reaction, describes how his heart broke, but he had learned that the way to protect himself in a moment like that, in vulnerability like that, he crossed his arms, he put on his angriest face, and he let them see that they could not get to him, that they could not bother him, that he did not care, when inside he was breaking. And stories like that, moments like that, made me recognize that for some of us, when we have been impacted by deep, deep hurts, we can wear, as the saying goes, our heart on our sleeve. But for some of us, we have learned, and I use the collective we, that it is not safe to be sad. That it is only safe to be angry. And it completely turned around the way that I look at anger. And I began to look at what might be behind the anger that someone was bringing to, in the context of that class, a pastoral care session. There's a term that some of you may or may not be familiar with, ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. There was a study done, there have been a few studies now, and the first 10 ACEs the researchers measured, and I, in recognition for those of you who can't see all the way to the back, that we do still have a young member of our audience, I'm going to be somewhat oblique in sharing these. But physical and verbal abuse, physical abuse in all ways possible, physical and emotional neglect, a family member who is depressed or diagnosed with other mental illness, addiction, imprisonment, witnessing a family member suffering their own abuse, losing a parent to separation, divorce, or other reason. Since then, they've expanded that list to talk about the impacts of racism, something that we all, unfortunately, now can speak to, witnessing violence outside the home, being bullied, involvement with the foster care system, living in a war zone, living in an unsafe neighborhood, losing a family member to deportation. The list goes on and on and on. And those are terrible things in the moment. But what the researchers have discovered is that it's not just our minds that hold the memory. People who have more than four, just four of that list, are 12 times more likely to take their own life. The list goes on and on. Cancer, higher rates of cancer, higher rates of emphysema, higher rates of everything. And one of the speakers who I heard talking about this, I listened to lecture after lecture from physicians who said, I used to think that was the work of churches, that was the work of social services, but now I recognize that trauma is also impacting my work, because the people who have suffered trauma, the people who carry the memory of trauma in their bodies, they're bringing risk factors into my office. And if I don't understand the ways that trauma impacts the memory of the body, then I cannot treat them. So what can we do about it? I don't know all of your professions, but I doubt that every single person in here is an MD, or a psychiatrist, or a psychologist, or a psychotherapist. I'm a consultant who's going to be a minister. So what in the world could I bring to that work? Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said, the most beautiful people we have known are the ones who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and found their way out of the depths. So in this interconnected web, in this interdependent web of existence, who's holding the light out of the depths? Now, I do want to add one caveat there. No one, not one single one of us, is always standing at the top lighting the way out. Every one of us is both at the top with the lamp and in the depths trying to find the light. At some point in our life, or in every day in our life, we are both and simultaneously. So what can we do? Telling the stories. One of the things that I find so beautiful and terrible about people whose families are touched by memory disorders is that often the memories that go first are the most recent ones. The things that stay are the stories from the past. Those are the ones that Patrick Reyes was talking about. Those are the ones that we have to hold, all of us together. What these researchers found when they started talking about ACEs, when they started talking to parents who were caught in this cycle, is that just naming it, just telling the story, was incredibly powerful. That all of a sudden they weren't alone. That all of a sudden we weren't alone. That we are all in this together. They found that mindfulness meditation, there's something called mindfulness-based stress reduction. And that was a powerful tool that these physicians and these psychiatrists found to bring to their patients. Any of us is capable of mindfulness practice on our own and of sharing it with those around us. And it's the those around us part that I want to focus on for the rest of the time we have together today. We talk about building beloved community. In the Christian scriptures, there's a story of a woman who lost money, a significant amount of money, in her house. She searches her entire house, and when she finally finds it, she calls in all of her neighbors to celebrate. It's a good story. It has a happy ending. And there was something about that story that always bothered me, and it took me a really long time to realize what it was. In the story, the woman does the searching on her own. She only calls the community in when it's time to celebrate. What would it look like if we did more of the searching together? What would it look like if we let our family, if we let the other parts of our interdependent web in on the messy parts? Along with the pretty parts once the crisis passed. Dr. Irena Schaus talks about how to help children who have a high ACE scores. And she said something that really resonated with me. She said that children and adults who have dealt with trauma, which in today's world is all of us, every single one of us who has ever seen the news, has dealt with trauma. She said people who carry trauma need a circle of security. We say sometimes that we've got each other's back. You know, go ahead and put out this idea. I've got your back. Where does that come from? I would imagine some of you in this room, like me, enjoy history, and might know some of the history of that phrase. That comes from the times of hand-to-hand fighting, when there was a lot more of it than there is today. That you can be the best, in that time, swords person in the entire world, but you cannot see what's behind you. And that's how trauma works. We can be as self-aware as anyone out there. But at some point, at some time, about something, something is going to sneak up on us. And when we are together, when we have a circle of security for each other, when we draw that circle wider and wider and wider, then we have the security to build resilience and we can get each other's back. So how do we build that circle of security? Certainly coming together like this today is one of the pieces. Eating meals together, breaking bread together, those are all pieces. Being attuned to each other. You know, this is the medical advice. See if you can hear some of our UU principles in it. Perceiving deeply and empathetically, being attuned and plugged into each other, being seen and felt, having a safe place, providing a place to go if you feel anxious or stressed, knowing that you can leave and come back at any point and things will be okay. Having help to cope with your emotions and your situations, and knowing that the place in which you share those situations is a place of safety and security. Those are all the medical pieces of advice for dealing with trauma. And those are all the things that I love the most about the Unitarian Universalist across the world. One final quote that I'd like to share with you, and then I have a few questions for you. Nelson Mandela said, "The greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall." And I would add, and in helping each other rise every time we fall. So some reflection questions as we prepare to move into our discussion time. What are some ways that you, personally, could educate or help other people who might be dealing with ACEs, whether it's children or adults who might have faced adverse events in their own life, or people you meet on the street? Because we're all connected. Just a few weeks ago, on a Friday night, I joined some friends to go to church, or to go to service at their church, at their synagogue. And as we sang, I was so overcome by a sense of oneness. I didn't know the words we were singing. We were singing in Hebrew, and I don't speak that language. I'm not Jewish. And yet, it was so familiar. And I was just really moved and touched by how connected we really all are. And the next morning, I read the news. And I was struck again by how connected we all are. Just this week, this weekend, I've seen posts by friends on Facebook who are connected in California. Just how connected we all are. So what can we do to help? Who could be your partners in this work of helping each other heal in the mind and in the body from trauma? Who could help you build resilience think about the obvious partners that this society might be able to work with, but also think about the unusual ones, the unlikely allies you might be able to find. What are the skills, assets, and resources in this community that could be tapped in this work? And then most importantly, when you envision a resilient community, what do you imagine?